This is a Lip Media podcast.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Slut. Welcome to Book Slut, a podcast bringing erotica out of the gutter and into a snobbier gutter. Hi, my name is Abby.
And I'm Sam. It should go without saying that this podcast is not safe for work, so put your headphones in. How are you going?
I'm okay. Good weather. Good vibes only.
Good vibes only. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I'm about to bring the mood down.
Yeah, I'm excited. Even though you keep telling me not to be excited, yeah. I'm still excited.
I need you and everyone else to just temper your enthusiasm at the moment.
I think we really need to name and shame you.
Me?
In this episode. What? For the quick changes of books and or themes and or yeah, everything. Look.
I am a hot mess at the moment. I started like three different books before picking this one, and I feel like I made the wrong choice at the end of the day. So I really wanted to talk about like Australian romance or Australian erotica and like the representation of Australia in these books. And I kind of wanted to explore like a bit about like, weirdly enough, like online a bunch of Americans like see Australia as like an exotic location for romance and erotica, and so I kind of wanted to explore that, and I kind of wanted to talk about a bit about colonialism and romanticizing all of that. And anyway, this didn't give me any of that really. So that's what I really want to explore when talking about like Australian representation.
I remember I got really excited when I was at a friend's holiday house because I found a Mills and Boone or like a Harlequin romance that was about, so their holiday house was a, and I always get this wrong, Phillip Island.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Harlequin romance written about someone at Phillip Island.
Oh, amazing.
And I was like, this is great.
That's the firstly, kind of thing that you want to pick up when you go on holiday.
Yeah. Firstly, that like this is in your holiday house. Amazing. And also that it's about like the area, right? Like it's just about where we are, which is cool. And I read it and it was so interesting because like Phillip Island is, I mean, it's a holiday destination, but it's not exactly what I wouldn't
call it exotic.
No. And like, you know, it's kind of got more ties with like supercars or whatever, V8s or, you know, they do that race. That's Phillip Island, isn't it?
Formula One? We're revealing ourselves as people who don't.
Not, a car thing.
Not very like true blue Aussie, are we?
There's a car thing that happens there. But we'd been to like the local pub and it was pretty kind of Aussie pub-ish. And then I was reading this romance book where they talk about her like going to the pub and it was all like, ooh, like fancy.
Oh no. Was the book any good?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe we should have read that one.
No, I mean, as is my way, I think people noticed me reading it like at this holiday house. And so I read out passages.
Oh, beautiful.
But there was definitely like,
who knew that,
what was to come? there was definitely like sex on the beach and stuff, which I thought would probably, I mean, I think there's two Australian cliches, which is the beach and the outback.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess if you go historical, it would be things like colonial times or stuff. But I haven't actually seen that many. I don't know, when I was doing Googling into Australian romances, the main thing that came up for me was rural romance.
Yep.
Which was a lot of kind of small town, outbacky vibes.
Yeah.
Stetson hats, except we don't call them that.
What is that?
It's an Akubra.
Ah.
It's like the Texan version of an Akubra.
There you go.
So you didn't have fun with the book.
No, I did not have fun with this book. So I read the first book of the series called Outback Brides of Wirralong.
Is Wirralong a place?
No, oh. I Googled it.
It sounds like it could be an Australian place.
It does. So this was published in 2019.
Ooh, recent.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
One might say too recent for some of the things I'm about to say, but who knows? It's subjective, I guess.
You can be subjectively wrong.
So I got to say, like, just up front, like, I really hated this book. The romance was not believable and it was not at all sexy. So Okay. Strap in for that.
Okay. I'm ready.
So it opens at a wedding from the perspective of Lacey. So there are four books. Oh,
I hate the name Lacey. And I feel like it's a common romance name. I've yet to meet a real life Lacey.
So in the four books in this series, each of them follow a particular character, and this one follows Lacey.
But it's like an interconnected community, right?
Yeah.
Which is something that we haven't spoken about with romances, but is actually a really common feature of a lot of romances to have, like, the brothers of Brides Glen or, you know, the McGregors or whatever.
Yeah.
That it's like you either follow a family or you follow a group of people in a town so that people can keep returning to
the same
characters and also see the life of the characters that they left in a previous book. I think it's a really common romance.
Well, it makes sense because then you, like, build up attachment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great way to do a series,
yeah.
You know, that is focusing on the kind of personal lives of different people, but they obviously interrelate with other people around them. So, yeah, I think it's actually one of the things that you mostly find in romance that you don't really find in a lot of other
other books. It's different to say in like an epic fantasy where it just, like, follows one on from the other.
Mm. It's like deep diving into one or two people's lives, but you have all these other characters that are also there, and then suddenly you deep dive into those characters' lives, and it might be happening at the same time as this or, like, slightly different timing, and you see the crossover of events, which I think is, like, I quite enjoy it as a thing.
I wish I hadn't deep dove into these people's lives.
Okay. I mean, yeah, enjoy it if it's done well.
So Lacey has a huge amount of baggage from her previous marriage. So she's just gone through a divorce from a guy named Jerry.
Okay.
So he was, like, super controlling, really possessive. And so she's obviously processing that. Fair. She's very, like, caught up in not wanting to be in another relationship similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's sitting at this wedding, and then in comes Cameron James, and I quote, "Wirralong's sexiest single policeman."
There were sexier married policemen, but, you know.
He's all that's left.
He's all that's
the only bachelor.
On the police force. There are sexier single men as well.
Yeah, it's quite
neat. It's just...
In a rural country town. Competition is
how
not
big's their police force? Like four people.
It's just like the local cop. So he arrives and he sits next to her. She's, like, looking at him, and like, he's well known as being a bit of a player. He's got a lot of. He comes from, like, a broken family, and it's well known around the town that he, like, is terrified of commitment and just, like, yeah. But she's looking at him like. Obviously really into him, but she's, like, scolding herself for it because she's like, he's not a good, like, prospect. He only wants, you know, one thing and blah, blah, blah. She's like, he exuded raw masculine power in a devil-may-care sinfulness that made her want to sigh from behind a curtain as she watched him walk by.
Wow, that's detailed. Also, the more we read... particularly romance, I think. I am intrigued by the term exude in a sexy way. Because me, exude feels kind of like ooze.
Like pus?
Yeah, like if something's exuding something, it's just like slowly, like, seeping out of them. Ew. I don't know, it's just not a sexy word to me. But
I hadn't thought of it like that, but thank you for ruining that
me.
So they're sitting next to each other, and, like, they're both, from their own perspectives, admiring each other from afar, but he's looking at her like, oh, she's so prim, and like the reason that I'm interested in is because she's off limits, and she's looking at him like, oh, he's a awful play, like, you know,
yeah.
So that's the setup.
Good. So it's like a pretty like bad boy,
definitely,
but bad boy cop.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. There's a lot of like romanticizing policemen in this, just kind of like throwaway lines about him like
protecting and serving, exactly, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And how it's not just his job, but like it's part of his personality. You know, he's there. He's a strong man. There,
and
to protect
he's just her. Racist. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's wasn't included in the book, but you got to read between the lines.
The subtext. I think that comes back to kind of some of the stuff we're talking about with class, where like a lot of the men in these stories are represented as firemen, policemen, you know, this
well, it's like the perfect hero archetype, really.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I say perfect in like air quotes.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see post the real like Black Lives Matter, that kind of stuff, how it's going to relate to cops being represented in things like romance.
Yeah. Definitely.
Right. Like, is there going to be a recognition that people don't see cops that way
and
haven't for a long time? Right. Like,
I mean, some people still do. I mean, some people do.
Yeah. But I think it's an example of a white genre writing to white audiences.
Definitely. Definitely.
So it's like, oh, well, you can just make this assumption that people think that cops are heroes because you think you're writing to white women and you are a white woman.
Absolutely. So then we switch to Cameron's perspective, and he's going all on and on about how marriage would never be in his plan. And
well, they're just like, you've just seen someone. When I see someone across the room who I think is hot, I'm not like, man, that guy is hot, but is he marriage material? I just don't know. It's not the first thought that comes to my mind. Maybe like 5 years into dating, I would be like, is this man marriage material?
I guess you would not fit into the Brides of Wirralong universe.
Yeah, right.
It's in the title.
Good. But I think this idea that people look at each other, I mean,
and
I get it's part of
each other as prospects
like
for marriage.
I know it's part of this happily ever after thing that happens, but that to me is absurd. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are people.
No, it's absurd. You're not wrong.
Who look at someone and immediately think about their marriage prospects.
I guess because they're at a wedding at the moment. That's where they are. Maybe that's why she's even more so like, oh, people are getting married. I want to get
married. Like when I'm at a wedding, I'm like, somebody here probably has drugs.
Free booze. Where are the canapes?
Just hiding, like sitting at that table right near the door where the waiters come out. Yeah. And be like, oh, I just sat
at the
here.
Singles table.
Yeah. They know. Quick note though. Putting the singles table by the waiting staff door. Absolutely.
A
on
genius.
Board with that.
Genius.
Do that. If I've got to sit through your wedding, you need to make sure I'm well fed.
Absolutely. And so he's thinking to himself how Wirralong is, quote, full of luscious ladies happy to have a good time without getting into a heavy relationship.
That is not my experience of country towns.
Anyway, he goes on and on about how he definitely avoided serious women, just like the honey he was trying not to stare at sitting primly next to him. It must be
the
big
honey.
Keep out sign that was making her so attractive to him. So I was already just like, oh, I can't. Like, I think the thing that jarred me about this book is that I really want to find romance and erotica, but more so romance in this context, that doesn't fall into these traps, and this fell into every single one of the traps.
And also, I just like, she's sizing him up, he's sizing her up. Where's the keep out sign?
In her prim, like, and proper body, I don't know.
You know, like they obviously are attracted to each other. Where's he reading in this, like, stay away from me, sir?
Yeah, I think she had just been like cold to him in the past or something.
Oh, right.
Anyway.
She should smile more.
That's what men like. So Lacey gets up. Turns out she plays the saxophone. Lacey gets up.
Sorry. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. badass. So she gets up to play with the band at the wedding.
Amazing.
And she's like some saxophone genius, as it turns out. And Cameron loves jazz. And so there's this line where it's like, he loved sax. Change of vowel. He loved sex.
No wonder she's being cold to him. Like, is that his leading line?
He ends up approaching Lacey, and there are things in there like, he felt like picking up her glass and pressing his own lips to the spot where her mouth had been and checking checking the dosage of liquor, or better still, kissing her and seeing what she tasted like. He doubted he'd get away with that in court. I was just checking for alcoholic intake, Your Honor. He didn't say it out loud, but the thought made him smile.
Just picturing a man picking up a glass that I've just drunk from and like tonguing it, you know, like
you creep. So they flirt more, and then I actually quite like this. So he quite boldly is like, Lacey, I'd rather this evening didn't end. Will you come home with me and stay the night? Up front. Into nice. It. So she goes home with him and they bang, supposedly, because I didn't read it. There was no banging.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
It was like a fade out.
Yes.
What?
I was like, ripped off.
Was there was sex in the book though, right?
Oh, yeah. We'll get to the sex.
Yeah, okay. Surely the first time is the main time.
Especially
that you
this
write
time
about
where it's like hot. They're like, oh, they're all into each other. And it's like they both think it's a one night stand. So it's, they're probably really going for it.
Yeah.
No, nothing.
Right.
Left me cold.
Okay.
So then he gets a call in the middle of the night because, oh yeah, did I mention he's a policeman?
Oh, right. Yeah, right,
he
right,
serves
right,
and protects. So he gets a call in the middle of the night because he's on call while he's banging this chick.
Uh-huh.
And there's a woman at this country train station who's in labor. And because there's no hospital in the town and the ambulance is off somewhere else, he needs to drive this woman to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Which is like not that far-fetched. That happens
in
country towns.
Yeah.
For those of you city slickers.
Yeah, I like how careful we have to be about the things that we're actually not laughing at in this. That's okay. We'll allow that.
Lacey goes along because she's a midwife as well.
Oh, God. Lacey is a woman of many talents.
Yeah. Yep.
Shit name, but many talents.
And as they're on the way, the woman ends up giving birth in the back of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron freaks out. He's all like, babies, birth and blood. This is why I'm very careful with contraception. So,
babies, birth and blood. Oh my.
This is why I run a mile from marriage and inexperienced women. They trap you into the hell of it all. Needy women, broken families, confused offspring. Like he really flips out.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And Lacey's like, whoa, calm down.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Mm.
And she's thinking to herself, well, this guy's fucked.
Yep.
I'm out. Fair. And I don't want to see him again.
Yep.
I was like, that's fair. That's fair enough. So she heads off to Perth to go and like finalize her divorce because that's where her ex-husband, Jerry, lives.
Mm-hmm. And where is Wirralong? Is it in West Australia?
No, it's in Victoria.
Ah, okay. Be quite a journey. You just got to go to either a regional airport
and then to a
city airport. I mean, do we know whereabouts Wirralong is in Victoria? Or is it just like regional? No. I'm getting too much into the logistics of this, aren't
as
I?
As always.
Okay.
So she's in Perth and she finds out that she's pregnant.
They didn't use contraception.
No, they did. They make a point of it. Like they make a point of it again and again and again that they use a condom every time they had sex. And she took the morning after pill the next day because after his little like out.
Yeah,
she was like, nip that shit out.
All right.
Anyway, so somehow she still falls pregnant.
Yeah, super sperm.
Yeah. Well, he's very strong. He's a policeman.
He's a policeman. Yeah. Right, that makes sense.
And so she's like, oh, shit. And decides not to return to Victoria straight away because her plan is to go back to Victoria, buy a house in Wirralong. She's got friends there. She wants to move away from her awful ex-husband. But she's like, okay, I'm going to wait a little bit until I've got some money because I don't want to go back and Cameron to feel like I'm trapping him because of his huge fears about women trapping him. Then the book jumps to 8 months later.
Okay, cool.
Whoosh. So 8 months later, she heads back to Victoria. She's on the plane.
Wow. It wasn't just like a couple of weeks in Perth. It was like, I'm going to be very pregnant on the plane.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to fly that late into Europe?
Went into detail saying that she had gotten a letter so that she was allowed. So there's your logistics.
See, I feel like these are all the things that would have made you bored and I would have been really into.
That's probably true. So Cameron still has no idea at this point. And meanwhile, we hear a little bit from Cameron's point of view that he's like ruined since their one night together.
Can't sleep with all the other hot honeys of Wirralong.
Exactly. Exactly that. So yeah, he's been pining a little bit. Anyway, Cameron's on call again one night and he gets called out again for another pregnant woman going into labor.
It's Lacey.
It is Lacey.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Shit. So he arrives and he sees her pregnant belly and he's like, oh, well, she obviously got around after me. She hasn't been thinking of me at all. Wow, wow, wow.
Oh, man.
And then it makes the hospital in time. So they pull over. And
he needs to drive faster.
Put your siren on.
Yeah, like you're in country Australia. You don't even have speed limits, really. You're the police.
Wait, they do have speed limits.
I mean, not on some roads. Oh, maybe that's West Australia.
Yeah, unmarked roads are like 50. Wow. Okay, we've all learned something about your driving.
He's a policeman. He can do what he wants.
That's the problem.
What? Who are they going to go to? Bloody IBAC? They're not going to do anything. We know that.
Oh, shit. It's true. Okay, so they don't make it to hospital. They pull over and she makes Cameron take off her underwear and he makes some joke about like, oh, again?
Oh, not the time, Cameron. Not the time.
And then to his astonishment, she pulled off her loose dress until she stood before him in her lace bra and bare, bountiful, beautiful baby belly.
A lot of bees.
I love the alliteration.
A lot of bees.
I'm here
in
for
this
the
book.
Alliteration. And so, like, at this point, I was like, what the fuck am I reading? I did not sign up for this.
Still hasn't been any sex.
Just pregnancies. And so she gives birth on the side of the road with Cameron there. Cameron starts to get a bit like mopey about it. And so like part of his internal thing is like he realized that he wished that it was his baby and not some fellow from
Surprise.
Perth.
Surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bet you won't wish that hard when it is your baby, Cameron.
No, that would be far too real. A few days later, he goes to visit the hospital and she tells him that it's his kid. And so he's obviously in shock and reacts not well, which I think is kind of like reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would react very well in that circumstance.
Me neither. Again, it just goes like at length about all of his like commitment phobia and but he's also like torn because it's one woman that's changed him for the better and
how they had sex once.
I know. I know.
Her healing vagina.
As though there's like something like innately wrong with not wanting to settle down as well. Like,
yeah,
needs
exactly.
To be fixed.
It's a, yeah, it's a pathology.
Yes, it is. If we've learnt anything from our readings. So they are completely incapable of having like a
adult conversation.
Yes. The communication in this book is awful. Again, from his perspective, he's like, they didn't know each other well enough to co-parent a child, but they had to. He had a son. He needed a plan. Then it hit him to marry Lacey.
Good plan. You can't possibly raise a child and co-parent not married. That makes sense. No, that's a good step. I solidly support your future plan.
Good one, Cameron. They fight some more. She gets really angry. And then he has this bit that annoyed me about how she looked so beautiful when she'd been spitting fire at him that he wanted to kiss away her anger. I just hate the whole, like, you're beautiful.
You're
when
beautiful
you're angry.
When you're angry. No, I'm angry when I'm angry.
I'm beautiful because I'm beautiful.
I'm beautiful all of the time.
And then on her end, she's like, damn the man for being so big and gorgeous and lost.
Fuck me.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so they plan to have dinner to sort it out. pages and pages and pages go by of incredibly, incredibly dull internal monologues about their respective issues.
It's like, I'm your audience,
not your psychologist.
And like, I get that you want to make your characters relatable and like real with like real person issues. And I'm not definitely not trying to like downplay the issues, but fuck, I don't know. It was dull to read in a romance.
Yeah.
Anyway, so their dinner where they're trying to like figure out what to do doesn't really go well because they're terrible at being humans and communicating. And then there's like a couple of lines about him like frisking her and like women love men in uniforms. Because did I mention he's a policeman?
Okay.
You looked like you wanted to say something.
Frisking is so problematic. I just, the sexualization of what is like inherently such a traumatic event for so many people is very upsetting. But
yeah,
that's fine. Let's move on.
Let's take a break and then I'll reveal the end to you.
Ooh, okay.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I do just have a question.
Yeah.
Was there like Australian slang in the book?
Oh,
did they ever say like, ya drongo?
Not as much as I wanted. A couple of times it was like, crikey.
They actually said crikey?
Yeah. But I really wanted more of that. Really did.
Yeah. One of my colleagues says a lot, says mad as a cut snake.
Oh.
And I hadn't heard that since I lived in the country. But I'm like, God, that's a good saying. Like, it just, you know.
You know what I like? Your flaming galah.
makes me think of Alf.
Oh.
And wasn't he like a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, you ruin everything.
Sorry.
I can't sexualize frisking and I can't enjoy your flaming galah because of fucking Alf.
I do genuinely, even though I hadn't heard it before it became a joke, but now I like it in a genuine way, is like, I didn't come here to fuck spiders.
Oh, really?
I quite enjoy that as a, like, a genuine response to things.
I would not have picked that for you.
Also, my mum always says, or used to, I don't think she does anymore, but she used to always say, built like a brick shit house. That was like a big one. That was a big one in my family.
Even things like shit a brick. That's
shit
pretty
a brick.
Aussie.
I say shit a brick quite a bit. Yeah.
I do think we've got some pretty good, and by good I mean absolutely bonkers sayings.
Yeah. What was that? Wasn't there a Toyota ad where it kept on like running into things or something? And they used to say an Australian word. Sorry, I didn't give you much to go off.
No, also cars. What?
I know. Oh, I don't. Oh, damn it. I'll think about
bugger?
It.
Is it bugger?
Bugger! It was bugger! It was bugger!
Oh, another bloody Volvo driver.
Yeah. And there was the little kid who was like, bugger! That one.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so glad you got that off what I was saying. Anyway, okay, so a few crikeys, that's all we had.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and they mentioned like kookaburras a couple of times, but there just wasn't enough Australian references.
Yeah, I think that's a problem when it's like, well, this could be anywhere. Like, this could be a small town anywhere. I want it to be Australian.
Yeah. So, okay, next thing you know, there is another woman who is pregnant in labor in the bush.
I see why at the beginning you were like, that's normal, that seems fine, because now you want to be like, this is not normal.
And
how old's the child? Like, do we have a time frame?
Oh, this is within, like, from when she gave birth, this was within, like, maybe like 2 weeks or
oh,
so.
Okay. Wow, yeah.
That's high frequency pregnancy in the bush.
High frequency pregnancy.
You would think that the town would be like, this is a common problem. Mm. We should work on.
Let's get like another ambulance or something. So the only person in the town who can go and help is Lacey. Sure. She's not a practicing midwife at this point. She's helping out.
Yeah.
Which,
cool.
I mean.
Community spirit.
Sure. And Cameron just happens to arrive to help out too. So that's nice. So they drive off to help this woman and they end up helping her give birth in a motel on a mountain. And the baby's breech. Well, I was like, oh, drama.
All I can think about in my head is like, where are mountains in Victoria? Where is Wirralong? But yeah.
Yeah.
Breech baby.
Breech baby.
Breech baby in the beautiful, bountiful belly of the bumbling bride.
In the bush.
In the bush.
At one point, Lacey tells the woman to like feel between her legs. And she's like, oh, wow, a little bum and some boy parts. And then Cameron winced at the graphic picture in his mind. And that is the most explicit reference to body parts in this whole book.
Wow. This is really PG.
It's so PG.
Sorry. So the woman reached down between her own legs.
Yeah, as she was
and felt his bum and
yeah. And so Cameron's like, ugh.
I mean, for a man who's now been to 3 births, he's quite squeamish for like no reason.
And then finally, incredibly, the entire baby was lying on the bed below his mother with a fat umbilical cord swimming in mess. He turned his head and took a few deep breaths, felt the nausea roll over him and forced it back. So that was from the perspective of Cameron. That,
right.
The baby didn't take the breaths.
Yeah, I thought it was the baby. I was like, why are we suddenly in the head of the baby?
I wish we had been. So Cameron's all grossed out and I was like, you know what, Cameron? Same.
Yeah.
At this point,
yeah.
I didn't want to read about an umbilical cord in a romance novel. So there's a big storm and they can't leave the mountain. So they have dinner at the motel restaurant and Cameron's like plotting. He's like, I got to woo Lacey. I got to like get her to marry me.
Try just like not being a dick. I don't know.
I mean, that's one approach. So he ends up telling her that he loves her and proposes at dinner. And she is like, oh, sorry, let me think about it. Which I respected.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. So she doesn't believe that he loves her. She just thinks that he's like doing it out of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, let me prove to you how much I love you, but gently. And I mean, she's like 2 weeks post-birth. Like,
yeah, you would want to be gentle.
I don't think you're allowed to have sex for a while post-birth.
I know nothing about birth.
I'm pretty sure.
Except that it can rip you.
Well, another reason not to be putting more things in there while it heals.
Also, that they found that doctors were sewing women up who had been ripped tighter than what they were originally.
Oh, yuck. Like, just like being like, ugh.
Yeah.
Love a tight.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. Just being like, this will be a good vagina.
Ugh.
Made it tighter. Yeah, read about that.
That's disgusting.
That was fucked up.
There's a lot of stuff around pregnancy and giving birth in hospitals and stuff that it's like wildly alarming.
One of my friends, when he was studying to become a doctor, did, I don't know, one of his subjects or whatever on that, and then literally sent me a text message being like, don't go to a hospital to give birth.
Oh, God.
It's terrible. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, I remember one of our friends who's a doula, I remember her talking about like one of the benefits of having a doula present is that they're there and able to like...
And they can advocate?
Yeah.
Like you shouldn't have to advocate for yourself when you're trying to push something out of your vagina. Like
exactly.
That to me is insane. One of my like most vivid memories of my first year of university when I was doing anthropology was a whole thing about the way that birthing has become centered in Western society has become centered around making it easier for doctors who are generally male to deliver babies rather than like the woman who is
like
having the baby.
And how they like lie back rather than lie back.
On
their all fours would be like easier. But
Yeah. Or like with birthing stools like it used to be or whatever, and how it's now like you're on your back, and also the prevalence of like giving medication to women and stuff. Again, not a doctor. I know nothing about birth.
But I guess gender politics touches everything, including this. So he takes her back to his room and then after what feels like an eternity reading about the gentle caresses, here's the sexiest part of the book. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
From that point on, their joining flowed like mercury, a ball of silver longings, rolling together and seamless in forming one molten entity that swept them away until even their murmuring stopped and they fell asleep in each other's arms. I mean, come on! I'm sorry, I'm really upset about having spent time reading this book.
Yeah, I mean, I guess romance is...
Well, it's a broad genre, right? Yeah, and like not all of them are going to be erotic and not all of them are going to be...
Interesting.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I guess it's more probably the disappointment of not knowing what you're going in for.
Well, that's it. I wish I, like, well, I went back and I was like, did I miss something? Did I, like, not read the blurb properly?
Well, I think it's interesting because, like, they never say on the blurb that it's explicit or not explicit, you know? Like, you don't know what you're in for romance. That's, I think, why they had those, like, steamy or...
Oh, yeah, the little categories.
Yeah, the categories. Mm. But even so, that's only for, like, Mills and Boone or Harlequin. Yeah. You know, they don't have that with normal books.
I would have just loved a heads up being like, this book contains not one, not two, but three pregnancies in graphic detail. And no sex in any graphic detail.
Yeah, it is a bit weird that the pregnancies were like described a lot, I mean, but the sex wasn't.
So I did look into that because I was like, what?
One of the women who writes one of these series is from Newcastle, just by the way.
Oh, yeah. There's,
yeah.
It might be this woman. She is a midwife and writes a lot of like medical fiction and stuff around midwifery. Had I known, I would have gone in with my eyes open at least.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Anyway, so we're getting to the end now.
Yeah, right.
So they're finally driving home and then Cameron's car rolls over the bank towards a cliff.
Oh my God.
Drama. So Lacey tows the car out, but he's unconscious. They airlift him to a hospital. He's
also
in a coma.
He can get to a hospital. The women can't.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
He gets a helicopter.
So he's in a coma. It's not looking good. Meanwhile, Lacey's like, oh no, I actually do love him. I wish I had said yes to his wedding proposal. Blah. Her and the baby go and sit by his bed for ages. And I mean ages. In terms of reading it.
Yeah, right.
And so in the end, she ends up playing him a recording of her playing the saxophone. And that's what wakes him up.
Oh my gosh.
And then in the last chapter, it's their wedding. And there's this line that's like, above them all, a kookaburra sat in the gum tree and laughed.
Laugh, kookaburra, laugh. Kookaburra gay, your life must be.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful rendition. Until quieted by the sound of a lone saxophone playing the bridal march. So there you go.
Oh, yeah. No, I can. Yeah. I see.
You understand?
I understand.
I was so let down.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it brought, for me, it brought up some things around, like, I guess kind of what you mentioned before about expectations, what we expect of romance and the broadness of that genre, but also around like, yeah, the sort of hero archetype and like falling back into these cliched ideas about like pregnancy will sort of like bring people together and that like marriage is the solution. Like they're quite antiquated ideas. And I was just struck that they came up so profoundly in 2019. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because you would think that things are changing. And if things are changing, then that is kind of for everyone. Like, you shouldn't have to look for progressive books to have things where it's like maybe it's not immediately sizing someone up for marriage, or, you know, this idea of a one-night stand isn't like this horrific kind of like naughty thing that people do, that kind of that those norms would be becoming more prevalent generally.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just our bubble talking.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can see how this ticked a lot of like sort of like the romance boxes around like the happily ever after. There was certainly a lot of obstacles to overcome together. I mean, nothing brings people together like giving birth on the side of the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds super traumatic. Also, the baby came out in like of all the lengthy things in this book, the birth was not one of them.
Right. Okay. Okay. I guess it's also interesting when we were talking about the idea of it not being quite Australian enough is also an interesting point to kind of look into for us personally. It's like, oh, well, if someone is writing an Australian fiction, does it need to be super Australian?
Mm.
And I guess it's kind of like if it had gone too far the other way, we would have been like, ha ha, scoffing at being this isn't our Australia, you know, like this isn't.
Absolutely. If it had been like that Simpsons episode where they like
get out. Dollary doos.
Get out like the boot.
The boot.
I would have been like, this is appalling. This doesn't represent Australia at all. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But also I think there is something. I mean, I think it would be hard. It would be really hard to write something about regional Australia unless you lived in regional Australia and to write it well, because I think there are some very particular, I don't want to say like stereotypes or cliche, but like characters that you come up with in regional Australia. And we've both lived in regional Australia.
Yeah.
And there is a particular community out there and it's easy to push over into making fun of them if you haven't experienced that community as well.
Yeah, totally. And like I was harsh on this book, but I think that she did kind of capture a bit of the like community vibe in it. It was just sort of lost in amongst the three pregnancies.
Yeah, and I think as well it comes to this idea of like our cultural cringe, which I think a lot of Australians have about things that are very Australiana and very particularly white Australiana. I think I was reading things about, I mean, I couldn't find much. I was saying to you, this is the one subject where academia just does not give a shit.
We've got stuff on like zombie porn, but nothing on Australian erotica or Australian romance.
Yeah, not really. There was stuff about Australian literature.
Yeah.
And, you know, its popularity. The thing that I found was that particularly recently there's a lot more of an understanding. So I looked at this Australian book readers survey results. And it was saying almost two-thirds of the Australians surveyed regard books by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander writers as important for Australian culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think there's also becoming this push for having Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voices. And I went into the Australian romance writers, or the romance writers of Australia site. I read their annual report.
Oh my God! I love you.
Because I wanted to look, and I think you did this ages ago, maybe in like our first or second episode, where you were trying to find the board members.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find all of them, so I can't say if they were mostly white. Their names led me to believe that. But I did see in their annual report, this year's annual report, they have just created a diversity subcommittee.
Oh, like the Oscars.
Yeah, with the remit to inform the committee proper on matters of diversity that are encountered, reviewed the language of relevant policies and documents, as well as proactively offering suggestions for how RWA can better manage the diverse nature of our organisation.
Oh, okay.
So it seems like it's something that the Australian writers, romance writers, the Australian Romance Writers Guild have recognized in some way and are actually taking steps to address. But on the subject of the, I think, a little cultural cringe, I think also the idea of what you're saying where it's like exotic for other countries and it's not exotic for us.
Yeah.
I read an article that was about the cultural export of romance.
Oh, yeah. And it was saying that Australian romance writers sell mostly to international markets. Almost 900 romance titles by Australian authors were published in 2015-16, which is more than double the output of fantasy and over four times that of crime.
Yeah, right.
And so, it also makes me wonder if maybe people writing about Australia aren't Australian. And this is where you get these, outback kind of vibes.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do find... So, for instance, when I was in Brazil, they have a restaurant.
Okay.
They have a chain of restaurants called the Outback Restaurant.
Oh, they have... Fuck, what's it called? Similarly, in England, they have a chain of restaurants that are...
Oh, is it called Outback?
I don't know. Because
it might be global. I don't know.
It's definitely Australiana.
Yeah, I went there and it was the food... One of the food options was a fried onion, a deep fried onion, an entire onion deep fried. And I was like, is this what you think Australia?
Is this what you think of me?
Is this what we do? I don't know what this is.
Who am I? What?
Who created this
restaurant?
Did
they have a deep fried Mars bar?
No.
Oh.
It was just,
see, that would have been more.
I can't remember anything except for the onion. It was just crazy.
Side note, the other night I got one of those giant pickled onions from a fish and chip shop delivered. Not just a big onion. I got other things too. I ate it. It was good.
I'm good. I'm glad. And the other thing was that they were saying that the RWA in Australia has 730 members, which makes it the largest writers' organisation in the country.
Oh, right. Okay. So in terms of other genres in Australia.
Yeah.
There are more...
Well, I don't know if other genres have
guilds.
I
kind of love that romance writers have guilds.
Yeah. It's it seems quite communal in that way, kind of helping each other.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is also fed into the kind of communal nature of fanfic and
that's a good point.
Kind of thing. But it's interesting to me that there isn't that much information around romance in Australia, particularly considering that it is quite a large cultural export that we have of Australian writers, but writing for international audiences.
Yeah.
When I don't think Australia would be bucking the trend of people not reading romance. I think we do read romance.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the things that came up in that article that's not entirely related, but I also think is an interesting point that seems quite specific to romance is the amount that romance readers read.
Yeah.
So the fact that, so this one you were saying is the series and people will read them in a week.
Yeah.
And then they will, not only that, but you find a writer that you like and they will read the entire backlog. And a lot of romance writers have 30, 40 titles. It's just this
prolific.
Yeah. So it's this really interesting, particularly for a genre that doesn't have, you might think of it for fantasy because they have Comic-Con and they have these massive meetups and stuff, whereas romance for the readers doesn't have that kind of stuff. It has it for the writers. It's kind of fascinating that there are so many people reading so much romance who are kind of secret.
It's this huge subculture that no one really talks about or knows about.
Yeah. And it must exist in Australia.
Oh, 100%. It must. Well, I'm glad that I was able to share with you that because it's something that I didn't want to carry on my own.
I'm glad this is a safe space. I am sorry that it didn't have very much sex and sounded very not sexy.
I think what I have learned.
Uh-huh.
Over the course of, doing this podcast, is that I have no time for your traditional conservative romance. Mm. I need to be playing in the erotic waters. Otherwise, I just don't think it's for me.
Yeah.
So, I hope that next fortnight, whatever you read is
I'll aim for enjoyable. It to be better.
Love.